Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code SPOTIFY for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
All right, everybody. Thanks for joining us today. We have a really good podcast tonight. I'm here with Keon from Split Screen. He's an organization out of Pueblo, Colorado, right?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
Well, thank you for joining us tonight. We wanted to have you on just kind of get a little bit of feedback because you've been doing tournaments. You've been doing different events in Colorado, something that we're familiar with. And I thought it'd be a good idea to get you on and kind of let everyone know whether they're in the area or if they wanted to maybe get into esports or have any organization questions, kind of give them some information about kind of your path and your journey to where you've kind of gotten to now. Yeah. So thank you so much for hopping on tonight. Really appreciate it.
Oh, of course. Of course.
Yeah, thank you. And so why don't we can start off with letting everyone know, you know, who you are, what your background is, how you got into, you know, the gaming industry, how you started Split Screen, and then what is Split Screen?
Oh, definitely. All right. So it's been a long journey, man.
Yeah.
So my name is Keon. I am the owner of Split Screen, and we're actually building a video game lounge out here in Colorado. I got my start actually back in 2016, 2017. Fresh out of the Navy, looking for like just something to do. So I was actually going to school to make video games. And while I was going there, I was working at this mom and pop shop. It was a small video game store out in Grand Junction. And I know, like, I was drawn to games, so I knew I wanted to do something video game related. So that's why I went to school to make them. But while I was working at this mom and pop shop, I noticed there was like a really weird like environment. So the owner, he was kind of like a stickler about like if you weren't purchasing a video game, get out. But I found myself oftentimes like I love talking about video games. I love video games. If you came in and had a question, I'll talk your ear off. If you had an opinion about a game, I was there like halfway. If the owner wasn't there, I'll talk to you about video games for a couple hours if you let me.
Yeah. Sorry, my dog's chewing on something.
Oh, no, you're good. You're good. I'll keep it going.
Oh, but yeah, you're good. You're good.
But then I got to talking to my wife about it one time. We were walking our dog one night, and she like had like a suggestion, like, what if you like made your own video game store and you could have like a little hangout area in the store where you could talk about video games? I was like, that's pretty cool. But then I didn't want to sell the game. Like, it's cool. Like, video game sales is awesome. But like, I didn't want to sell games. I wanted just to hang out. And that's when we got the idea together for a video game lounge, a place you can come and play console games, PC games. If you had nostalgia, you can come and play retro titles. I wanted like an environment that could like recapture that 80s arcade vibe, but like today. And like with all the technology we got now, you got PCs, so it's rare that you're gonna hop or go to a physical place and play with somebody as opposed to hopping online. So I wanted to create a unique environment that lets you do that. And fast forward, after we started fleshing out the ideas, so mom and pop shop went under, unfortunately, and I was working at Walmart at the time, and I was writing down ideas for the video game lounge on like receipt paper. And over time, we started like fleshing it out and making it real. So fast forward, we're here. But we had our first tournament in 2018. We put on a Rocket League tournament. We advertised it as free. Anybody can come participate. We're giving away a Series X, an Xbox Series X, and a PS4 Pro at the time. Ended up having like, I want to say like 80, 90 participants come hang out. So I was like, okay, wait, I might have their ear with this.
Yeah, that's a good turnout.
It was a crazy turnout. I was sweating. I was nervous, man. Didn't know how to talk to people. Then we did a Smash Bros. Tournament. Now, when I advertised my Smash Bros. Tournament, I put it in like the caption, our first major event. Didn't know what a major was. Like, I played a lot of games, but I didn't play in a lot of tournaments. So I didn't know if there was majors and minors as far as sports go. So when I said my first major tournament on like put on Facebook, I had some Smash Bros. Tournament officiants come and like contact me, like, hey, this is not a major event. Take this down. Like pretty much got like a bunch of backlash. I didn't realize that there were gatekeepers in the Smash Bros. Community. Wow. So I actually went and met with them. We sat down, we had lunch, we talked about it, and I explained to them, like, this is my first major event, first one I'm putting on, like a paid event. Explained it to them. It's not going to be like how normal Smash Bros. Tournaments are ran. It's going to be a free-for-all tournament, and we're going to make it family-friendly. Everybody can come and hang out. We ended up selling out, and I'll say like 2 or 3 weeks, and I was like, okay, this is real now. It's like, it went from idea, like, paper to like, I got something like we can like push to the masses. And yeah, that's how we started our like tournaments and whatnot. Now fast forward today, I'm actually promoting a Madden tournament we have coming up here at Century Cinemark in Aurora in XD. I think it used to be called Century 16. I gotta look up the actual name of the establishment, but we have a Madden tournament at the movie theater. So fast forward, we're building our lounge and we're actually still putting on events all over Colorado. Sorry,
yeah, I know, that was great. So recap. So you worked for a mom and pop shop.
Yes.
They weren't running it a way that really cultivated community. And then they closed down. And then you open up a lounge, or do you what was it that did you open up a lounge?
Yeah. So there was a spot on campus. When I was going to CMU, it was called The Point. They let us rent out their space, put up a bunch of consoles, and hang out and play at The Point and have tournaments and just have like daily operations. You can come and hang out. We'll talk about video games. We got trivia, giveaways. We were giving away like merch. This is like not what we had back then, but we like gave away t-shirts and everything and just had a space to come and hang out, talk video games, play video games. And yeah.
So was that only for college kids or was that open to everyone?
The public. So it was the first spot. So we started off for college kids, but it was open to the public. So we had locals come out and hang out and play games with us. Nice.
And you were running out of the college campus. Yeah.
That was our first brick and mortar.
Okay, cool. So then you have that, and then you start, and then from there you build kind of a community, right? Like you got people, you kind of have a spot, you kind of have a name, brick and mortar, and then you start hosting your first tournament, which is Rocket League. Is that right?
Yeah, that was Rocket League, very first.
And you do that at that spot?
Yeah, we're doing it right at that spot. So we had Rocket League and a couple Smash Bros, and then a Call of Duty tournament out there.
So how are you, for people who are starting out, you know, maybe they want to get into tournament hosting or maybe they want to get into some sort of events. How did you structure your promoting or your tickets or your, how did you even start the event or, you know, what was your plan?
Oh, okay. So I didn't have a plan. I'll be honest. So you think you got a plan and like everyone has a plan until they get punched in the face, but so my plan, quote unquote, which was just really haphazard, we were going to do some guerrilla marketing. I was going to press up a bunch of flyers and I was going to just post a bunch. I didn't even know about Facebook ads until I had some traction. But so we made 2,000-3,000 flyers and we hand to hand, like, hey, I talked to people in parking lots at Walmart's, Target, the mall, went to the on campus. And I was like hand to hand with every flyer. Hi, my name is, I had a 3-minute speech. For everyone, like, passed out, like, no BS, 2,000 flyers. Hi, my name is Keon. I play a lot of video games. I want to introduce you guys to Split Screen. We got a tournament coming up. It's free. Come hang out. And I did that and passed out every flyer hand-to-hand. I wouldn't recommend it. I mean, there's probably a smarter way. But in doing that, people got, like, my whole, like, face. They got to see who I was and got to interact
with me.
Then we also had, like, we set up a desk for signups on the college campus. We were, like, just meeting and hanging out with people and just talking about games. Like, what's your favorite game? If they happened, if I got lucky enough, they said their favorite game was the tournament I have. Anyway, come hang out. Come play the tournament.
Yeah.
So that was how we actually built my first, I want to say, 300-400 followers on social media in person.
Wow.
But having them in person gave me enough leverage because, like, these were organic. So that way, if I'm interacting with you, I'm going to get, like, way better analytics. And they told their friends, you know, one friend tells two friends and so on and so forth. And then you have a buzz big enough to do something with. Then there was also the social media aspect. You know, I made a bunch of posts, spent unnecessary money on ads. Like, so that part was a hassle. Like, in your head, you think if I put $200, the whole city's gonna know about my tournament. I have,
yeah,
but that's not how it plays out. So I want to say it was like a 10% rule. Like out of 100 people who viewed the promotion I got, 10 people actually liked it. Then 10% of that, one or two people may have committed to coming to the event. So that was a numbers game at that point.
Yeah. Which is funny you say that, because when I started doing tournaments, I did the same thing where I would put Facebook advertisements and, you know, you put however much, X amount of money. You think that it's going to get that many impressions. You think it's going to get that many people coming. And then I had a separate registration form on that ad. And so, but ours was like, we would have probably a, like, let's say we have 100 signups. We found out that on average, it was always 40% of a show rate. So whatever registered people we had, 40% would show up. So the first tournament, I think we had like 30 signups, 25. And so we're like, cool, we got 25 people. End up being, you know, 10.
it's painful when it first, when it happens.
Yeah, when you first start.
It makes you feel like I'm flop. So mine actually was inverted. So I had a big turnout first one, decent turnout second one. But then fast forward, I put on a tournament for Madden at the Mirrors Gallery in Denver. And I had, I want to say like 120 RSVPs. Granted, it's just RSVP. So in my head, I'm like, this is going to be a crazy turnout. It's going to be a packed event. It's going to be wild. And I had like, I want to say like 12 or 13 people show up. I was heartbroken the whole night. I was trying to contain it. It wasn't working. But that's what made me realize I can't trust the RSVPs, but like tap into the analytics. So like,
yeah. And that was a huge lesson for me. Cause I, when we were putting them on, me and my friend were, we would have, we started big signups, but not a lot of turnout. And then we tried to figure out, like, try to break it down. Okay. So how do we pinpoint how many, like, how do we actually get a good estimate of how many people are coming? Because if you have, like you said, RSVPs, but you're having your show rate be super low, we needed to figure out a way to like basically get them to commit before at the time of registration, because a lot of people register and then they would just not show up. No matter how many reminders I sent, text, emails, everything, we couldn't get more than 40% showing up. Yeah. And so I still haven't been able, kind of cracked it, but you almost need for everyone listening, if you're hosting a tournament, I would suggest you get registration form with a payment that's linked to it. Because two things, right? Obviously, we need to cover our costs to run the tournament. So one, if you don't show up, that helps cover the cost. And two, most people are going to show up when they pay money. So they're already committed. So that, for me, was figuring that out really helped. But then that made it almost start over, because now then I had a small reservation. So then you have less reservations. So then you're trying to advertise and promote more. And it's a really hard struggle for any of the TOs out there or event hosts.
It's a delicate balance in that. But one thing I would recommend, like, it's going to sound like super cliche. I always recommend, like, take your community, take who you are and everything you're building, and reach out to other communities. Tap in, cross promote. I feel like even though you have like your group of people who lock in with you, if you go lock in with somebody else, you two can tag team these events. So you give it a pull from someone else's pool and you guys can both feed each other.
Yeah. And the gaming community, I feel like right now, is so new, and networking is such a huge asset that a lot of people underestimate, that you can cross promote and it's beneficial for everyone. Everyone's going to benefit. It just helps the community. Like I basically, every community I've reached out to has loved to collaborate or do something. And it's great. You know, everyone's just trying to grow and build their communities, and it only betters everyone when we cross, basically pollinate.
Basically.
Yeah. So you do the tournament. That was, you had a great turnout. And then from there, you were like, okay, I want to start doing more tournaments now, right? So you kind of got like excited about doing events.
I did. So I want to say like my love for the tournament part of it didn't start until later. So I was originally only doing tournaments to make enough capital so that we can build our own brick and mortar in like a different location. Like I wanted to buy a building and then, you know, get the lounge going separate from the school, like create our own brand identity. But then as we started like doing more creative events, like not just having a tournament, but having we had a cosplay event actually. So we did Mortal Kombat, but then we opened it up to, if you came in like with Mortal Kombat costume, because this was like a Halloween, close to Halloween tournament. So if you came with the costumes, then we'd give you half off of the ticket. You get a raffle, and then we're giving away another prize on top of like the grand prize everyone's competing with. So we had a costume contest on top of a tournament. So then that's when I started noticing there's conversation happening amongst the people. So everyone came to play their game, but they also came to hang out because we have like a hangout vibe. So if you can like make it unique enough, you can do something somebody else is doing, but they'll be more gravitated towards what you got going on because of the unique aspect. Mm-hmm. Fortunately enough for us, we were the first in Colorado to have video game tournaments at movie theaters. So like it's that part was like beneficial for us. Absolutely.
Yeah. So go into a little bit of that. So I've never, I don't know if anyone else has heard, but like, I haven't ever heard of anyone throwing a video game tournament at a movie theater. How did you guys end up getting into those spaces?
All right. So,
gave you that idea?
So the movie theater themselves, actually. So they, on their website, like if you're like looking for a movie, you want to go see new Marvel movie, whatever. Mm-hmm. Scroll down, they just on their page, they have private events and you can play video games with your friends. So I'm like, okay, that's cool. Like me and my friends, we've shared posts back and forth. Like mm-hmm. if we all go hang out and play Halo 3 together, we can be just the five of us. But then you start looking at the cost of it. But booking a theater is pretty expensive. So I was like, if it's just me, five of us playing video games, why not invite some people and see if we can do something with it? So I drafted up my first idea, and that was for a Smash Bros. Tournament. And then I sent it to the theater. So I actually like reached out to the Harkins GM. And because it was such a unique because it was so unique, the GM sat with it for a minute, then reached back and asked me to come meet. And we sat down and like broke down the logistics of how a ticketed event at a movie theater where it's not their tickets, it's ours, would work. And after we sat down and like figured it out, they said, well, there's like we had a really big latency like between the console to the theaters. Like you need some type of buffer. And we put together like putting the monitors, play on the monitors, and then we'll have everyone who came to watch the tournament get to see it esports style on a big screen. Mm-hmm. And the theater loved it. So they actually reached out to us a couple of times. Hey, can you guys come back, do some more tournaments? And that's what got a ball rolling. So we did something unique enough that got us in the door with some attraction.
Yeah, that's really cool. I've never heard of a tournament being hosted at a movie theater. So how did that look then, compared to a traditional venue? You know, was there like a registration at the front, or how was the process for people wanting to get in?
So for this one, we got permission to advertise, to have the tickets booked through our website. So on splitscreenlounge.com is where you get the tickets to come to the event. But the QR code worked for the theater scanners. So you can get your ticket scanned, just like if you get like one on your phone to go see a movie. We had the same QR codes. So we basically had, like, it was theater 4. So if you had a QR code for theater 4 at that time, it was just like going to see a movie. Mm. And so it helped, and it boosted our legitimacy like tenfold. We went from, like, we're still pretty, not to say no name, but we went from like no name to like some buzz when you have those steps involved. So just to make sure that I was able to track the traction correctly and like make sure that we have the right amount of attendance, we had the paywall on the website. You book your ticket and then you come to the event. And that's what helped, I would say, balance out our RSVPs from our actual like show rates.
So that did, so they had some sort of commitment when they're registering for that tournament.
Exactly. So I give you all the information, like the tournament details, the rules, regulations, and everything, and then you get the choice to pay it, just like Ticketmaster or wherever else you can book through.
So for a lot of your events then, let's say before that, how were you doing the logistics on that? How were you managing, you know, registration?
Facebook events, which was highly unprofessional, but like go on Facebook, create an event, and you can like hit the check mark going, interested, or not going. And I was basing everything I was doing based off of the interested and going. And then I would have up in person, I had like a little Square card reader. It's free. So if you ever want to get one of those, go on the Square website, set up your business. They'll send you a card reader for free when you set up your account. Kind of cool. But I had that at the front desk. And I had...
So people could just pay when they come in?
Basically, yeah. So I didn't have any way of getting like the payment beforehand. And we put a table out in front of like where we had the establishment or whatever establishment we were like running it out of. You'd come up. I had a spreadsheet, like 200 names of RSVPs and whatnot. I got meticulously typed them out. And they'd come in, and then we'd check them off a piece of paper. Like, this person is coming. Yes. And then we'd build a bracket in that 20 minutes before the game started, which it was hectic. It was stressful. but it gave us a lot of like insight on how to actually like handle steps ahead of time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, I find as a TO, that's one of the hardest things is basically making the registration and seeing that through to the day of people registering and playing, and then having that translate into a bracket. Yeah. And so for us, our approach was I create a Google Doc form, and so what I did is I had like name, mm-hmm. Details. So I try to get as much details as I could, right? So name, phone number, email, console, gamer tag, everything. So that way I could remarket to them when there's the next one. So I had an email list that I built up. And so that really helped me in the long run, being able to just keep adding every tournament, you know, 50, 60 people on the email list. Ooh. And then eventually I found a way that you can actually get payments on Google Forms. So if you guys, you know, if you or if anyone else wanting to do events, that's a really good free option. You just hook up like your Stripe or PayPal to it. And so you have a Google form, then you have a payment at the bottom, and you can just put like register for whatever event. And for us with Localhost, we did a split, or like there was a venue fee and then there was a tournament fee. And so in the beginning, they were paying the venue fee in person with cash or card because the venue could take that. Yeah. And then I would be either taking cash, or it would be like PayPal or Venmo or Cash App. So when you start from the beginning, you know, you don't have any resources. You don't know what you're doing. So it feels janky when you start out.
it's like you manage like 13 different steps just to get
it. And you feel like if there was a better, like, so we started, I was handwriting everything when it started, right? You know, you'd write who registered, and then you'd try to fill out the bracket, and finally I was able to get a figure out. We used Shalange, or at the time we were using Shalange, and so that was a great way. When they would register, we would just put it in as they registered. Mm-hmm. But now they have like, so a good one, shout out to Grilla. They're a really good software tournament app. You can actually host your tournament details on there. They can register on there, they can prepay on there, and it'll build the bracket out as people are registering. That one's a good software we used. And it's a really cool look. Like, that one will make you look real good because there's a link and you go there and it's like all your stuff. So like I said, we haven't done events in a while. I don't know. We have one, I think, coming up at MSU that we're doing with them. Nice. That's a Rocket League one. But more details will come up with that one later.
Hey, man, if you don't know, we can tag team an event.
Yeah, definitely. And anyway, and I'm assuming anyone can reach out to you guys, whether they want to get involved or have questions. I'm assuming all your socials are at Split Screen. Split Screen.
Some are at Split Screen. So IG is at Split Screen Reloaded. So unfortunately, we actually had our first page hacked and lost it. But so that's at Split Screen Reloaded. Facebook's at Split Screen. Everything else here at Split Screen. Snapchat, if you want to join the Snap Map whenever we got stuff going on. Which actually, that's a new thing we started playing with, was the Snap Maps. I didn't know anything about it. Mm. Like, oh, you Snapchat. And doing that actually gave us more walk-ins, weirdly enough.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
You find out that social media, like, it was people who are starting out, because I'm kind of guiding and helping mentor some of the other organizations that are kind of starting, because I feel like I've been there, I've done everything, and now I'm kind of like in a position where I kind of want to, with my lifestyle, personal lifestyle, I'm in a position where I'd rather guide and mentor versus do the stuff now again. Because for me, it was one person run the show, man, and I couldn't handle it. It was too much. One person trying to promote and create and then run the tournament and get all the scheduling, like photographers, shoutcasters, production. It was like just way too much.
That's how I felt trying to do it.
Yeah.
You really do feel like an octopus. You got hands on everything all at once.
Yeah. So whether you or anyone listening, like, if you guys need any help with anything, you can always feel free to reach out to me, and I can give you all the, I've built up a really good network of resources and directory of people that I've known, sponsors, just from the past 2 years I've been doing this. And it's tough. Like, it's really tough when you start out, because it's Wild West right now. There is no streamlined way of doing it. You kind of have to do what works for whether it's your personality or your work ethic or your game or your industry. It's really tough.
Absolutely.
So you guys have the lounge, and then from there, you guys are doing tournaments. So what is your guys' roadmap for 2024? What do you guys have planned coming up? What is your goals?
We have a million goals, but the roadmap that we got so far. So we've basically planned out, we got an event every month. So it's the last Saturday of every month. We have actually that calendar up on our website, so you can come check out and see what we have going on. We have Madden tournament in January. We have a Mortal Kombat one in February. We have some retro tournaments actually for OG players. We have a Halo 3 throwback night. So we're actually cool. Yes, yeah, so we got that one cooking up. So yeah, we got various games that we play. As far as goals, we're actually trying to finish the brick and mortar by summer of 2024, so that you can come and hang out at the grand opening and spend some time with us. We also are building up our streaming platform, of course. So, I mean, at this point in the game, it's necessary to be a content creator if you want to be a business owner. They have to plan it in. So we've actually doubled down and built a stream team. So I actually have a team of streamers who put on their content daily. And they're all listed as well on our website. I want to say, as far as one of our biggest goals really is just to have that consistency locked in and consistently grow our community. But we want to have all facets all covered. Like, if there's something that you want to do, something you're interested in, we want to have something for you.
Mm-hmm. So how many people do you have within your organization now?
Oh man, we can go down the list real quick. I'm gonna do some shout outs. I'm gonna take some time. Yeah. Promo. So I have a team of streamers. The first streamer that I have has actually been rocking with me one of the longest, and that's SSL Chino. So you can find him on Twitch at Chino Fettuccini. Then we also have SSL Biscay, one of our newest members. So that's SSL GG Biscay on Twitch. We have SSL Ambu Savage. Notice how I throw the SSL before everybody, because, you know, team split screen. Mm-hmm. We have SSL Hot Boy Honcho, and we have SSL Smoke Chops. So he's actually one of our biggest streamers right now. He does VR streaming, so he's blowing up, going crazy. Cool. We also have SSL Macaroni Tony. So you can find him on TikTok, Macaroni Tony. Like, I know we got some funny names, but so he's killing the short form content game. He plays a lot of like fighting games and whatnot. And we have a photographer who's a beast. He puts together some of the craziest compilation videos you've ever seen. So that's SSL Rico, but you can find him, Rico Dalston, if you ever want to book somebody for photography. He's technically a free agent, but, you know, he's family.
Mm-hmm.
Make sure I'm not missing anybody. We got.
And are those all streamers, content creators and streamers and just people under your brand?
So those are content creators slash streamers. So they all do both. They both create content, and they also stream regularly.
So for everyone watching, then, how did you already know these people before you started split screen, or did you reach out to them? Like, how'd you get these people within your brand?
Various avenues, actually. So I want to say some of them are like childhood friends. Some I actually met through just pushing the split screen and getting some traction from some of our newest members. And then we have some friends of friends that are recommended, like, hey, we're doing this, but I got a friend who also streams. And we'll come hang out, do like a vibe check, basically get see how the chemistry is, and if we can build and put together like stuff together. And yeah, so it's all kinds of walks of life. Yeah,
that's cool. Yeah, I always like to see how people, you know, like, in a position to reach out to other people and, you know, get them under their brand. I think that's a really good skill to have when you're trying to grow your brand, because
absolutely,
you know, like we were talking before, is you have to cross pollinate your audiences a lot. And so you got to find other people that either align with you or maybe even are totally different, just to get into different exposures.
Exactly.
Yeah. So you guys are located, your brick and mortar is located in Pueblo, right?
Yes. So Pueblo, Colorado is our first.
That's right.
Actually second, but our first official is our own.
Mm-hmm. And so anyone, and that's open to public, right? Anyone can just go in and chill, like,
come hang out. This is basically a modern arcade. You come out, any game platform that you play on, whether it's consoles, mm-hmm. whether it's PCs, even if you have some nostalgia that you like, really like, you want to play Atari, or you want to play SNES or NES or Sega Genesis, anything, we want to have an environment for you to come and hang out and play to your heart's content.
So then what is your day to day look like? You know, do you have a day job and you do this on the side, or what does that kind of look like?
So I have a day job. I'm a full-time student, work full-time, and I'm also doing this full-time. So it was just a hobby, but as it's gotten more serious, I've dedicated a lot more time. So it's a lot of late nights.
Mm-hmm.
But some that I wouldn't trade it for anything, like the exhaustion, the work, like the feeling overworked, going mm-hmm. Doing all this all night, and then immediately in the morning going to work, and then I was in between like work and this, going to school. Yeah, no, it's full time for sure, on top of all other stuff.
Yeah,
as you start making that transition from a hobby to something like stable, it
mm-hmm.
bound to take up your calendar and your day to day a lot.
Yeah. So then you must stay pretty busy throughout the whole, throughout every day.
Yes. And I have 3 kids and I have wife.
You got personal life.
Man, so it really is balancing that. But if you can like justify the means, it's worth it always.
Mm-hmm. So you got split screen set up the whole journey. And so throughout the journey, I guess, or in the future, what do you find are the biggest challenges that you've had and like you've had to overcome?
I want to say my biggest challenge was like answering that question, like, is it worth it? Mm-hmm. You hit a point where like, so the good times will carry you. They'll be like, oh, this is great. I could do this forever. But then you hit these walls where you're drained. You hit these walls where the outcome wasn't what you expected. You hit these walls where you're dealing with people who, I guess, drain the fun out of this whole process. Then you can answer that question, is it worth it, with a yes at the end of the day, no matter how bad it feels or how rough it gets. Mm-hmm. And that's how you know like you're on that right path with it. I feel like for me, like every day I gotta ask, like every day for the most part I ask that question, like, is it worth it?
Mm-hmm.
It's worth, like if I'm tired and I'm going from bang to bang, like energy drinks and coffee just to function, like, is this worth it? Like, I'm drained. I could have went to bed last night on time, but I stayed up till 3 a.m. so I can make sure that the graphics are just right for a flyer, or I made sure that this video that we're producing or this content that I'm like chopping up is like ready to hit the internet the next morning. Is it worth it?
Mm-hmm.
If you're like starting out or going for this, if you can answer that question with a yes, then like when it sucks, anyone can say yes when things are good. If you got a lot of views, if you got a lot of likes, if you got a decent amount of like some financial income from this, you can say yes easily. But when this sucks, when this process is rough, can you say yes? Is it worth it? Is it worth it? Is it worth the question?
Yeah. And I know that feeling, because like maybe there's some TOs out there that they've thrown their first tournament and they have a great turnout. And for me, I had to build it from 10 people to 20 to 30 to 40. And in that process, right, there's like you have the tournament and you feel like, is it worth it? Right. Because I've had tournaments where I put so much effort to it and you have a bad turnout and you're just like, man, do I even want to continue to do this? Is it worth doing it? But, you know, for people maybe like us or who want to get into it, if your passion is strong enough and you feel that that's something that you enjoy doing, it feels like it's always worth it.
Always. Absolutely.
Yeah.
There'd be some nights where you put like 4 or 5 hours into some content. Like you edited, you got the graphics, you never pop, and you get 2 likes. I'm never spending hours on this ever again.
Or you spend money, time, energy, and it's just nobody, like, you just can't figure out what you're missing. And that was one of the hardest things for me, was trying to just, at least for when I was doing the tournaments and events, I always learned something new after each event. And so that made me be like, okay, I'm ready for the next one because I know what I messed up on. And it was like a never ending list. Every time I figured something out, something new would come up.
Yeah, that's another part. You got to be a student. You got to like always be willing to learn. Like, I've made like the realization that I don't know anything. No matter how much information I've like gained, I realize I don't know anything. And I treat it like that every time. So if I'm a student and I'm open myself up to learn new stuff, then I can make my next one way better. So every time I put it on, I think there was a promoter who I talked to a couple years ago. And after we did all the promotion to put out the event, he said, you have to treat each event like it's a commercial for your next event. I was like, okay, let's put on a smiley face. Like, no, like right now, everything that you're learning, all the community building you're doing, this is going to go draw into the next event. So when you bring up the next thing coming, what's fresh in people's minds is what you just did. Everything that happens this evening is for the next one. So you have to learn what worked. You had some equipment fail, make sure that you got some IT solutions on a pipeline coming down. If you had bad turnouts, make sure you have some marketing like concepts in the pipeline. If you have bad environments, what like that, no, think about your demographic, your advertising. So it was like a lot of steps that went into how to approach each next one. There's like lessons to be learned in every single one, good or bad.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. You find out what worked, what didn't. Find out, like for me, was always, okay, the customer, or I guess the player experience was the most important thing to me, because if the player is not going to have fun, they're not going to show up to the next one. They're not going to tell more people about you. And that's where you stay. That's where you just end up stopping. And so for me, I was like, the customer or the player experience has to be there. And you're right. because that's fresh in their mind. That's, that will lead you to the next one, and you build on top of that. Yeah. And yeah, we ran into tons of stuff that I was like, okay, we need to fix that. So then that way they want to come back and they want to tell their friends about us.
Exactly.
Yeah. So yeah, definitely tons of stuff that you're always learning. And you always, for me, I was always, once I had one tournament done, I wanted to do the next one, but do something a little bit better or bigger. So I was always challenging myself and always growing. So no matter if you think you have it figured out for that one tournament, mm-hmm. I was always like, okay, let's take the next step now. And so there was always a new list of things to learn.
And see, that me, I always wanted to, like, I wanted to go crazy. Like, if this one did really well, I want to go crazy. I want to shoot for the moon every time. Yeah. Like, some of my ambitions, like my eyes are bigger than my stomach a lot of times. So I'm like, I shoot for the moon. I hit it by any means. But like, yeah, they aim for that always has been my approach.
Yeah. So you said your spouse is also involved, right?
Yeah, my wife. So she has been like my biggest support, because, like, you know, it's a in-house idea that you're trying to like build and put together. Mm-hmm. But my wife has been my biggest supporter since day one. When I told her, like, I was like taking this serious, like, we were walking our dog and like talk about like building this thing, mm-hmm. and like always in my ear, like, you can do it. So
yeah. Yeah, I would definitely say if you have a person that's there to support you, but also to make you look at everything, because when you're in it, people like us, we see a vision, but we don't see the challenges or the stuff that we're in tunnel vision, right? You see what you're just are trying to achieve, and they kind of help bring you back down to earth and make you realize some of the stuff that you need to think about before you just jump in on an idea.
Like, I look A to Z, like, that's where I want to be. This is where I'm at. She'll jump in, like, no, there's steps B, C, D, etc.
Yeah. Or like, why don't you think about this, or make sure you understand how this works. And like, really, it was a good idea. So doing it alone is tough. So if you know, whether you need a mentor or a guide or a spouse or a friend, you do need to be able to bounce ideas off of people.
Yeah. So crazy part, like, so everyone like in my like inner circle knows that like my wife is like technically the boss behind the scenes. Mm-hmm. She's so, I'm like really go with the flow type. I'm big on vibes and whatnot, but she's actually a supportive. She's like, no, we have this deadline. We have to hit this. And me, mm-hmm. I'm big on like, oh, no worries. We got time. But she's, no, we have 30 minutes. You got to hurry.
Yeah.
So she's big on making sure she, I'm the idea guy with this business that I've built, but she's the one that makes the steps real. She takes the ideas, mm-hmm. out, these crazy outlandish things, and makes them real. So I got to give like all the ultimate credit to my wife for that, just because she's a beast.
Yeah. That's great. Yeah, you need someone to help bounce it off, because that's how I am. The same way, I see the idea or have ideas and I just want to do them, but I don't fully fledge out the plan, you know.
Like, let's do it, let's figure it out.
Yeah,
just another steps.
Yeah. So then so on your tournaments then, you know, up until now, how did you, for me, I ran into trouble getting the equipment, getting the tons of things, right? But yeah. I guess from your perspective, you know, how did you manage from registration to mark, like, your plans on registration, marketing, and then the hardware? Because for me, I ran into a good problem, which was having too many people and not enough consoles.
Yeah.
You know, did you have to go and buy consoles, or did you get sponsors, or did you have resources?
So I actually went and bought everything out of pocket. So I actually,
oh wow,
like, unfortunately, like, you know, first couple, I went into debt going to the first couple. Like, I maxed out credit cards to put it on. Mm-hmm. But so the way it played out for us was, I had the idea, let's do this. And I kept doing like break even analysis for each tournament. So mm-hmm. if it cost, we'll just say $1,000 to put on this event. Now I'm already at $1,000 just to book it and just to get the equipment and everything. But how many tickets do I need to sell to hit this $1,000 mark to make mm-hmm. it work? And I had one PlayStation on hand when I put on an event, but it turned out we were going to need like five. So bought a second one, and then we actually like phoned a friend. I called all my friends, hey, can I borrow your PlayStation for a couple hours? Mm-hmm. And like, I basically like insured everybody's console. So like, if I borrowed a console, man, like, I got the money. So just in case, if it gets broken, I got some stuff for you. But typically, mm-hmm. like, that was only like one event, but every event for the most part, I go buy everything like out the gate. So I wish I could like tilt the camera a little bit. So like, we go and like buy the TVs and whatnot. So we like stack TVs and whatnot.
So you provide everything, the consoles, the TVs, controllers, production, everything.
Yeah. So we come out of pocket for everything. If I can borrow it, it'll help some of my overhead. Mm-hmm. So we give away consoles at every tournament we have, whether it's from a raffle or you get the prizes. So we've given away Xboxes, PlayStation, Switches, Switch Lights, Oculus Quests, we go crazy. Just to make sure, like, it's memorable. You want it.
Yeah.
I have raffles on top of that. So if I borrow a bunch of PlayStations, I still got to go buy a PlayStation to give away. I can't give away my friends.
Yeah.
But yeah, so we come out of pocket every time.
Wow.
We just now started getting to a space where profits from these tournaments can, like, help cushion that blow a little bit.
Mm-hmm. See, that's pretty good, because for me, I don't think at my events I was maybe breaking even. And I feel like a
punch, man.
I was losing, right? And then I was losing a ton money in the beginning, and then finally starting to break even. And then towards the end, I was making a teeny bit. Me, you know, just barely anything.
I got a crazy story, actually, man. So, like, one of our first tournaments, this is at the Monkey Barrel in Denver. This is one of the first tournaments where we broke even and had a profit. So we, like, broke even, then we had a raffle that pushed us over. So we're like, we're up. And in my head, I'm doing, like, quick math because I'm still running the event. And, like, we made, like, $1,000.
Yeah.
Like, we're pretty up. So the entire night, right, where my, like, team is eating. So every time my team goes out, everything's on me. Like,
yeah.
If you're going to help me put this on, I'm going to make sure that you're comfortable. But my team was, like, buying shots, and they were, like, going crazy and, like, buying. This was at, like, a bar. So it's a totally different vibe for a tournament. But they were, like, racking up a bill. And at the end of the night, in my head, I'm like, we did great. So I pay everybody from my team. This is the first time my team's actually able to take some cash home from an event we did. We didn't win the event. So I paid everybody out. And we leave the turn. Like, we left the venue. Packed up, left. It's like, this is a great night. So team got paid, and I still had, like, $200. I'm like, we're doing it. And I got a phone call from the bar owner. I was like, hey, you guys have an open tab for $500. So is somebody going to come and pay that? Or?
Oh, no.
And the whole evening, everyone would go to the bar and say, put that on split screen.
Yeah.
Put that on split screen. So we broke even. We made a profit, but then turns out we overindulged a little bit more than we should have.
Sure, yeah. Celebrate a little bit more than you thought. Yeah,
too excited too early.
Yeah, I mean, for me, it was really hard to, for a lot of people, I think they see events and they see, right, the big ones when they've already built up to where they need to be. Yeah. And they think, okay, you charge $10, $20, however many per person, right? 10, 15, 50. And you get 100 people, that's, you know, $5,000. And they think it's just, like, easy like that.
No. So one thing you got to remember, you get your overhead before anything, or you have a single penny to your name, you have your overhead. Everything that you spent to put this on is just you get the money back for that. Whether you owe the venue X amount of dollars, or you need to get reimbursed for the equipment you spent money on, or the flyers you purchased, or the ad space you purchased. After all that's said and done, then you also have, like, I guess most people have, like, a tournament prize pot. So some of that money from the tickets is going to that. And then you also have, if you have a team that's helping you out, they have their fees that come with. You got a photographer, they have X amount that they're expecting. So after it's all said and done, it's really rare that you come out like crazy. Even if you have, like, a big turnout and a big dollar amount, unless you made it crazy expensive, the margins aren't the best in this field, unfortunately.
Well, and right now, you know, I started my tournaments with so there's a venue fee of $10, you know, because the local host, they had a venue fee.
Local host, man. Oh, man.
Yeah. and then we had a tournament fee of $5. And so even with, you know, 30 people showing up, it's like, dude, that's like $150. And our prize pool was $225 and minimum, you know. And so you have to find a balance, because I was like, I want to make it as cheap as possible so the most amount of people show up. Nice. But in turn, that also makes you very hard to cover all the costs of anything.
Yeah.
And then you want that. But then if you want to raise it up to like $20, $30, $40, then you have way less people showing up. And so it's trying to find that balance of,
you know, that ticket price broker. And there's like a sweet spot. Too low, you're not going to get enough traction to cover your losses. But then there's a sweet spot somewhere. Like, no one ever knows what that somewhere actually is.
Mm-hmm.
A little more is going to start to dip back down. You'll start out. So it's like walking on a tightrope, man. Finding that balance is hard.
And that balance, I don't think anyone knows until you start running them, because it was all over the place. Like, for me, I thought $10 was a sweet spot, but, or 15 or 20. Yeah. And I even till now, I still don't think I ever got to a sweet spot.
So for me, I've been like going like, what's the total cost for everything, and try to add $5 to that per ticket. It's been like, I don't say the sweet spot, but it's getting sweeter. Like, it's still working. Like, I'm trying to like get it to that point where you can have a profit, but you're out like without charging people crazy amounts of money. Mm-hmm. As long as like the prize, the environment, and like the bang for your buck
experience. Yeah.
As long as all of that can justify how much I'm asking for, then I can push it up a little bit more. And typically at every event we have, you know, everybody gets merch, whether you win, lose, or draw, it's guaranteed. You get a swag bag. Mm. Just make sure that's still, we want to make
that's
sure
that you're
always top notch. Mm-hmm. Environment and the feel, like the tournament, if it's going to do what the tournament is going to do. Mm-hmm. But I want to make sure that I'm creating an environment where you're comfortable and you can enjoy yourselves, even if you're not a player or you're not winning. Mm-hmm. Yeah, everyone gets merch, get a swag bag full of like split screen stuff. We always have raffles. Mid-tournament, we have like trivia. So if it's a Smash Bros, we'll come with questions that Smash fans would know. Mm-hmm. And give away stuff like for that. Then we also have like food and whatnot. So, you know, come for the game, stay for the food kind of vibe. Mm-hmm. But yeah, so we try to make sure it's a unique but also a memorable experience. So yeah. I know people compete in tournaments, don't remember the last like three. They'll remember that last one they just did, but three before that, they don't have any memories unless something crazy happened. Yeah. But I want to be sure that mine always are memorable, no matter what is going on.
So then on your merch, like, you know, how did you set up? Did you print them off yourself or do you order them or how do you do merch?
All right. So out the gate. So this is like me starting with no resources. There was a website called Spreadshirt. I bought my personal first hoodie from Spreadshirt. It lets you customize and create your own stuff. I'm like, I'm going to wear this to all of my tournaments. This is awesome. Then they dropped Spreadshop. You can make your own like e-commerce store. You can create your own designs, upload your own designs, and then you get a commission off of everything that gets sold through their website. And luckily, like I think I made like almost like 20, 30 bucks. So that was the end of Spreadshirt. Like it was still going. And actually, I still have Spreadshirt on my website, so you can still get stuff from there. Mm. So every time I create like a new design, I put it up there just in the event to get some traction. But we found more success in-house. So went and bought a Cricut, heat press, embroidery machine, a sublimation printer, and all that stuff. So while we give you all the stuff that we make in-house, so we have 100 people, we'll press up 100 shirts that night. We had more success selling those like basically out the trunk. So we got it out the trunk with the merch. Wow. And we also started selling hoodies. So you get the shirt for free just by showing up. We do sell them, like, not during tournament time, just on the street. Not on the street, but, like, out in public. But so we sell those, 10 bucks a pop. You come to the tournament, you get it for free because you already paid. But then we started a thing where I had these hoodies pressed up. And if you purchase the hoodie, you got free entry to every event we run for that year. So I'll press up.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so I actually started working with distributors. Like, so we started, like, we got a little bit of, I want to say,
connected
a little bit. We're doing a little bit better. Yeah. So reached out to distributors to press up our first premium hoodie, which is like embossed. I wish I was wearing it, but so it's like really professional, really like top notch hoodie. And purchasing that gave you free entry to every tournament that we have for the year. And we're going to do those at the top of the year. So January 2nd, we'll show the hoodie and I'll explain how purchasing this gets you like tickets to every single event we have for the year. Mm. And then we'll do that every January.
That's a good idea. Yeah. That's a good way to promote. And cause for me, I think I was the same way. I had what I did first starting, right? Cause you don't really know what you're doing. I had, my logo sent to, Lids, had them print out a hat for me. And then, I got them to do like a jacket and a shirt. So I wore that to the events. And then eventually I built the Shopify store. And obviously that's more expensive doing print on demand because I set that up with a print on demand back. And how I was bid marketing was I would use codes so I didn't have to carry inventory. So I would have a code that was like, hey, if you win, you get like $50 off your order from our merch shop. And so you can choose what you want and what size and color. And so for me, I didn't have to carry it, but it also made stuff more expensive. So a shirt was running like 35, 40 bucks. Whereas probably you guys have a much lower cost, so you have better prices, you know?
Yeah. Well, so I can give you a couple of cheat codes for the merchandise. So if you want to do stuff in-house, if you can get all the equipment and whatnot. There's a local warehouse out here in Colorado, actually. They got a space, and it's Jiffy Shirts. So if you're familiar with Jiffy Shirts, but they got a warehouse out here in Colorado. And you can buy shirts. Like, they got Gildan Tees, they got Anvil, they got Hanes. They got even, like, some more premium stuff. But the T-shirt cost starts with, like, $1.15 a shirt.
Mm-hmm.
So you can get some bulk stuff, go to, like, Target, or actually, no, I recommend, like, Amazon for this, and get vinyl in bulk, mm-hmm. get a Cricut and all that. So overhead, totally spend, like, maybe $200 to get a heat press, a Cricut, your starter, like, apparel, and some vinyl. And as long as you have, like, an imagination, you can cook up a bunch of stuff for $200.
That's a good idea.
Yeah, so that helps me keep my shirt cost down. It's like, this shirt here, it cost me $1.50 to make total,
mm-hmm.
and sell them for about $10.
So. Yeah, see, that's and that's like that's great. I mean, that's an awesome price, and that's why I wish I could do that. But with the cost of print on demand, it's too high.
And plus, you only get a commission on that, so it's.
Yeah. So that's like,
you get the whole thing, right? Do you?
Well, no. So you still have to pay for the shirt. So you pay. So I use Printful, and then that hooks up to your Shopify. So when someone orders on Shopify, that goes to Printify, and then they'll make it and send it to that person. So they drop ship it. But having that ease of service also comes at a price, which I do suggest, though, if you have a good brand, good design, and you have a way to sell that premium price, mm-hmm. then I suggest going that route, because, or your route, if you know how to do everything. I don't know how to do graphic design or printing or anything, but yeah, but like for anyone else, you know, for everyone listening who wants to get involved, that for me, that worked because that was set up and I had somebody make the website. I also designed it, but then I could decide how I wanted to market and use the merch as a marketing tool. So I would do like raffles, or I would do first place, second, would get cash plus like hoodies or stuff. Nice. But that did rack up a lot more cost than I expected.
And another thing, man, factoring costs is a battle all in itself.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know, because you said you're like me with the imagination. Like, you see the end goal, but then there's steps that hit you in the face. Like, I did not realize like this cost this much, and I'm already in the red.
Yeah.
I'm already advertising. I've already gone. I got to go.
You're in too deep already, you know? You got to see it through.
Man, like, I've committed. I've advertised it. But then you find out, like, this is way more expensive than I bargained for.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah.
And for me, I was like, you know, my vision, I want to see everyone wearing my shirt, my hoodie, you know, coming to my events. And I want to have, like, you know, the biggest events, and they keep growing. I have $1 million, I have the biggest prize pool in the region or something.
Exactly.
And, you know, you want to have DJs there and like make it a crazy, sexy, fun party. And then, but you don't see what it's, you don't see the roadmap clearly sometimes.
Man, exactly. I mean, you can add that cash register sound effect to everything that happens. Just change.
Well, Kian, I mean, we're running, you know, we're running up to an hour. I didn't know any, we'll start wrapping up, but I mean, was there anything else kind of you want to go over or kind of tell the audiences anything, like any special information or stuff you've learned, anything?
Stay in school. I'm kidding.
Yeah.
Stay in school. I just want to say, like, as far as like the gaming community in Colorado specifically, like how it goes, I would love to like have more people network. Like, being able to sit here and like talk with Lamar has been dope, because he has mm-hmm. his community, I have mine, but being able to come and talk to him, pick his brain and give my insight on topics. I would encourage like more people to go and reach out, like take your platform and go reach out. I would like love to like actually like set up like a network thing just for people who are like building the gaming infrastructure here in Colorado.
Mm-hmm.
So I feel like it is like you said, it is the Wild West, but if we can like tag team this and become the foundation of like what future gamers and like future players come and like work on, it'd be dope to say mm-hmm. that way. Like, we laid like the roads for this, we walked so the gamers after us can run.
Yeah. Exactly, so we can give them something to build upon, you know.
Exactly.
So yeah, so everyone listening, that they can find all of your information, all your events, everything new that's coming out for next year at all your socials. They can follow all the streamers, all of your content creators. Shout out to everyone that's involved. I've been following you guys. You guys are doing some great stuff. I really appreciate what you guys are doing for Colorado, trying to get the scene here built.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Thank you. And thank you again.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. Thank you so much for hopping on. Last, what I'd like to ask everyone before we end, though, is, since we're all gamers, right, what is your top 3 favorite games of all time?
So I've been watching your show for a minute. So
yeah, you've been ready for it?
I want to change it for a little bit. So like, I can't name three, but I can name my top three my top three developers that I feel like toe-to-toe with anybody's developers. And that's Insomniac, of course, Naughty Dog, and Sucker Punch. I feel like their catalogs can go against body stuff. Now, I want to like narrow it down to three, but that's impossible.
True.
For someone like me who plays like crazy amounts of games, I can tell you my three today, but that three will not be the same tomorrow. But I will like say I'll throw Spider-Man in there just because I'm a Spider-Man fanatic. So I got like a poster. So I'm a Spider-Man fanatic. So I'll always make sure he gets to mention at some point.
I just started Spider-Man 2, so I'm excited to get going on it.
Man, see, now I got the platinum with it. I played it for 2 days straight, and that was rough. I don't want to spoil it, but that's a great game. At the Game Awards had me sad. I won't lie.
It was a great game, a great year for gaming, though. Like,
yes,
it was an amazing year. I thought it was one of the best years in a long time we've had of releases and good quality games coming out.
Oh, fire! Like, shout out to Baldur's Gate, man. That's probably the closest thing I've vocalized. It's the closest thing to like a complete game I've seen released for an RPG in a long time, where it didn't need patches day one. It didn't need assistance. It didn't have microtransactions. It was the perfect game, in my opinion.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've yet to play. That's on my list as soon as I finish Spider-Man.
You can touch Starfield yet?
What was that?
Have you played Starfield?
No. See, I'm on PS5. So I don't have Starfield, but I've been thinking about getting an Xbox just for that. Yeah, I've heard it's a great game.
Man, that's one of my guilty pleasures for sure.
Yeah,
man.
Well, Keon, I'll definitely have you on again in the future. I think you gave my audience and listeners a ton of information that I think they can use. Because I think that was great. I don't think there's a lot of resources out there, at least that I can find, that gives people an idea of what it looks like to be an event organizer, TO, and thank you so much for all your insight, and I'd love to have you back on in the future again.
Absolutely.
You can stay on, I'll end it, but everyone else watching, thank you tonight, and we'll make some good content out of this for you guys.
All right, be in touch.